and Peoria, Illinois, representing the defendant appellant, Richard Taylor. Two primary issues, the first of which is the court's denial of Mr. Taylor's motion to suppress evidence. In this case, we made the requisite substantial preliminary showing pursuant to Franks versus Delaware, that there were problems with the affidavit submitted by the affiant officer in this case. Indeed, this particular affidavit
refers to his designation of the information as being a concerned citizen. Is that the?
That's one of the two problems that I'm raising on appeal. The affidavit references and incorporates police reports, which Judge Mim thought unusual, but they're all contained in the appendix to the brief. And those police reports refer to the confidential source as a concerned citizen.
Well, that's the same thing we just said.
Now, yes. A concerned citizen,
yeah.
Which is a term of art, as Judge Mim noted, in Fourth Amendment jurisprudence, because a concerned citizen's information can be presumed reliable as opposed to an individual who is a criminal informant.
Well, it looked a little goofy to me, too, but I want to know how does this affect the judge's decision as to whether or not to issue the warrant?
Well, in this instance, not only was the informant misrepresented to be a concerned citizen, he also had a lot of baggage with him.
Yeah, but you don't have to describe all the baggage when you're describing your confidential source. If you just describe a confidential source as somebody who gives you on whom you can rely, you don't have to say he's also a crook.
True, but this court in United States versus Korth and United States versus Brack cited in the brief say that when an officer's affidavit in conclusory terms deems the confidential source to be reliable, and this court said in Korth, that merits absolutely no weight, this court said, and the court must treat that information as having been obtained from a criminal informant.
Take information from a criminal informant and use it as a predicate for the issuance of a warrant as well. If he had been a convicted felon three times, you could still use it.
And Your Honor, they do it all
matter
the time.
Matter of fact, about 80% of them are based on, in fact, some squealer who's got a record about from here to Keokuk, Iowa.
And in this case, this informant had such a record, Your Honor.
There
indeed,
you go.
He was working for the officer at that time.
I have another modest inquiry that's apparently native to where you're from. You're in an area there. Do they use, as I understand it, the Bloomington Police Department and other police departments use this same language regularly?
Well, to the judge's great chagrin, the judge said this is completely outside the scope of 21st century jurisprudence.
Well, that's the district court judge you're talking about. I'm talking about the state court judge that issued the warrant in the first instance.
State court judge, his order, his search warrant is there in the record.
Yeah.
The officer testified that his department uses this language.
Yeah, what I want to know is that information available to the judges who are issuing these warrants, that they use this crazy language when they're describing somebody who they think is
I can't say, because this case was federally adopted from the McLean County State's Attorney's
office.
And we don't see many McLean County State's Attorney cases in the federal district.
Biggest county in the state, if I recall correctly, isn't it?
And it's getting there. It's growing rapidly, as they say.
No, I mean in geographic size, not...
The thing is, okay, so we give you this CS-241, and he's had this bad background, and he's committed all these crimes. I mean, there is so much corroboration for the information that he's given. I mean, even if we give you all of that he was horrible and all of this should have come out, almost everything in this affidavit was corroborated. And doesn't the court have to, look at all the factors and circumstances here?
Corroboration.
So it wasn't like a standalone. You know, your argument would be stronger if they had misgiven him the wrong name, calling him the citizen, and there had been no corroboration of the information that he provided. But the officer corroborated much of what he provided.
Well, the officer corroborates that a black male named Richard Taylor lived at the address. The officer corroborated that there was
actually
a boat in the parking lot or part of the driveway with a tarp over it.
But
other than those general facts, which do not reveal anything inherently incriminating, what is there being What is there corroborative of this deceitful individual who's supplying under the information, under the aegis, as a concerned citizen? We respectfully submit that the mischaracterization of this confidential source misled the issuing judge, because his status and the omissions about his motive to testify falsely and provide false information.
Would you say that the decision as to whether or not this misled the judge was a question of fact?
I believe it is a question of law, in that has to look to the remaining information.
But as a matter of law, he cannot accept this?
I'm sorry, maybe I don't understand your
question. I'm saying that there's a factual finding in the Franks hearing that he was not misled. That's not a question of law, it's a question of fact.
It'd be fact, but there was no such... In this instance,
there
was
a Franks hearing.
There was no intent to mislead. He gave the officer the benefit of a theory.
But he didn't say he wasn't misled. He didn't say he wasn't misled.
The order that the judge, and again, Judge Mims' findings are set forth in the appendix. They're rather lengthy.
Right.
I would submit that speaks for himself whether that is actually what the judge said.
Yeah.
I understood Judge Mims' order to be that the officer had no intent to mislead.
Well, I think that's true, but he didn't mislead. If he was misled, that's the end of that. But he still would have entered the Franks order in your favor, as opposed to you were you involved in the trial of this thing?
Oh yes, absolutely.
Right to the bitter beginning and the end. Yes.
Start to finish.
Attaboy.
And all points in between.
Could I ask you for that reason about this exhibit that they had of all the plants that were counted? Were like these bundled up stalks sitting in the courtroom?
Here's what we have, Your Honor. In our brief. And this is on page 50 of the appendix.
Yeah.
These are the plants that were in these plastic tubs. There were four plastic tubs, numerous styrofoam cups with one or more plant per cup.
Right. Now, I understand that. But then I thought at the actual trial, this...
What they did was they stripped the plants as they were counting and bundled them.
Mm-hmm.
And when we came to trial, they came out with a bag, a grocery bag, which they cut open, and all of the cannabis exhibits, as they called them, were laid out on a table for the jury to look at. And as I argued in summation, it looked like the trimmings of a weed eater having been shooting through large, tall grass. One could not make out from the physical exhibits themselves.
So it wasn't like they were neatly bundled in little groups of 20 like they were
saying.
There
were some, because that's how one of the three officers claimed he did his count.
Uh-huh.
There was also what looked like straw stalks just strewn about individually, and it was a jumbled mess. And I think even the government can't dispute that. There's nothing from the photographs, the judge said, that from which you can infer or know the number of plants. And this relates to the second issue, a special finding was made by this jury that there were over 1,000 plants, and that finding then triggers the mandatory minimum which the court relied upon in imposing the 10-year sentence.
That's the 10 years,
and regrettably, I did not object to trial. I concede that. The way this came about, we had two of the three officers testify. It's set forth in both briefs. Two officers testified that the four pallets were essentially split up amongst the three.
So you had objected that they were relying on the hearsay of the missing third man, and that's what you're...
The hearsay of the missing third officer, Your Honor, and they never introduced individual counts. Sorry.
Slow down.
Enthusiastic this morning.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I understand your if you had objected, all they had to do was call that third officer.
Mm-hmm.
So you failed to object.
Failed to object, but I raised
it. If you fail to object, it goes in. Then you don't raise it until post-trial.
Post-trial.
So
then I had the benefit of the transcripts and could review it line by line and do the numbers.
That strikes me as not an attack on the admissibility of the evidence, because without an objection, it goes in anyway. The judge doesn't have to jump in.
The 14-17 figure only.
We're talking about the total. That's your objection, based on the third one didn't testify.
Right. And if I may, not only did the third one not testify, but the individual counts of all three officers were never elicited and proven. So well, the officer testified the one, to the gross
two,
total.
Two of the officers were testifying.
Yes.
And those numbers went in. They gave the third number and said we added them up.
I respectfully disagree, Your Honor. That did not happen.
What happened?
The two officers testified to the gross sum.
Right, that's what I mean.
Nothing.
Not the predicate for the sum?
No predicates were ever introduced.
Mm-hmm. You mean they didn't say that each of these two did not say that they counted anything?
No.
All right.
There was no testimony that Officer A counted 500, Officer B counted 600, Officer C
what
counted
What they 200. Said was it?
1470 total.
What was said then was that we have taken the three figures and added them up, without saying what the figures were.
What the two officers said was that three officers counted their respective and unknown portion of all the plants. They tallied those numbers together. Total is 1,417. No testimony or evidence.
Was there any objection to that so far?
No.
Okay.
No testimony. Then the government closes its case. I make my motion for directed finding denied. We proceed right into our case in chief with 15 witnesses.
And in that motion that you made to the court at the close of the government's evidence, you didn't move to dismiss based on the fact that the government hadn't proven the number.
Sure, I did not. This is plain air. And if this doesn't affect a substantial right, I don't know what does. And I cite two cases, Pugh and Cromer from the Sixth Circuit, where under similar confrontation grounds, the court in those cases found plain air and reversed a drug conviction and a bank robbery conviction. This court ought to do the same in this case.
Okay,
or at least remand
for
resentencing.
Thank you very much, Mr. Tassif. Ms. Mullen?
May it please the court, counsel. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Linda Mullen. I represent the United States. I plan to focus my comments this morning on the Crawford issue, but would be happy to answer any additional questions you might have on the Franks issue. Our position with respect to the Crawford issue boils down to no harm, no foul. Even if there was error here in the admission of this testimony at the trial, it had no impact on the defendant's conviction, and it ultimately had no impact on the defendant's sentence. The jury was asked first to determine whether or not the defendant manufactured marijuana. It's really indisputable in this case that there was evidence supporting that. The defendant confessed, we've got the pictures, we've got the video, we've got the other testimony about the methodology of the count. So then the issue becomes, did the testimony in this case on this record affect the defendant's sentence?
And but you know, the interesting thing here is, I mean, you get this evidence about 1,417 plants coming in a way that it's impossible to test, actually. And then you compare it to what the original affiant said. He thought there were 160 plants growing in the backyard, which is quite a different, I mean, certainly a number that would have led to a much lower sentence because the mandatory minimum wouldn't have been triggered. So it makes me wonder whether, in fact, substantial rights are affected by this seat of the pants. You know, we think they're 1,417 plants. How do we know they weren't taking every stem from a single stalk and counting them as a different plant?
That's certainly a fair question, Your Honor, and that's why I think it's important to look at the testimony about methodology. In just the affiant was looking, you know, into an area and looking at a particular, you know, grouping of plants. It's very different than saying this is the methodology that we've been trained to follow in terms of what constitutes a plant. And what the officers testified to here is that if a plant had a root system, a stalk, and leaves, that qualified as a plant. So within these styrofoam cups, I think one of the officers said there were approximately 100 styrofoam cups. Another said that there were 30 to 35 per flat, and there were a total of 40 flats. But within each styrofoam cup, there were actually several plants in each of those, and that's what the officers testified in terms of methodology. So it really wasn't a seat of your pants kind of determination. It was a very careful counting, and we have testimony from two of the three officers as to that methodology.
So why don't you review the two or the three who's and give us specifically what they said in terms of the number of those little white cups and the number of plants, because no one testified as to how many they personally counted.
That's exactly right, and they couldn't have testified to that because they didn't remember at the time of trial, and those notes have been destroyed.
That's why this methodology, explain to me specifically about the methodology, because that's your big problem, because you sure can't tell from these photos, and I didn't see the video, so I haven't had a chance to look at that, but that certainly doesn't look like 1,000 plants to me.
Two of the three officers testified, Detective Atterbury and Detective Bays. Detective McCoy did not. Detective Bays was the officer who was responsible for combining the subtotals into the total count. Detective Atterbury testified that the three detectives brought the plants back to the Sallyport, that they agreed on a particular methodology, the methodology that they had been trained in for counting the plants. Again, that included they were going to separate the plants out. They would not count a plant unless it had the root, the stem, and the leaves. The three officers divided responsibility roughly into thirds for counting the different plants. At the end of their individual counts, that they all counted according to this methodology, they came back together and gave Detective Bays their subtotals.
So you're telling me that this police department trains its people not to preserve basic evidence of, say, the number of styrofoam cups. It doesn't train them to preserve evidence of the subtotals or notes. It just lets them kind of come in and pick a number out of the air and say, trust me, it's really 1,417?
Not anymore, Your Honor, from what I understand. Oh, but at this point in time.
It's an awful system.
Yeah, it obviously wasn't the best situation for us in terms of not having individual counts.
You can't tell. There's nothing, I mean, in terms of the cups, they did not testify for the jury that there were 100 cups. I mean, the individual officers, did they say, there were 100 cups, and in those cups there was an average of 3 plants?
It wasn't that detailed. One of the officers did say there were 100 cups and said that there were several plants in each cup, but in terms of the specific number.
He didn't specify quantity. So, see, the methodology argument you're making really doesn't carry the day if you can't tell us specifically how many were in the, you know, does several mean 2, does several mean 4? You know, it makes a big difference when you're trying to get to 1,000.
I understand that without the testimony of the 1417, it's difficult for the jury to find over 1,000 plants. But again, this was a determination for the judge to make at sentencing, and at sentencing, Crawford doesn't apply, and at sentencing, hearsay is admissible. So it ultimately, what the jury needed to find in order to establish a statutory maximum that wouldn't be violated here was 50 plants. Looking at the pictures that are appended from the exhibits that were presented at evidence that are appended to defendant's brief, you can get to over 50 plants. That triggers the statutory maximum of 20 years. So the mandatory minimum that was applied here by the judge, that was within the province of the judge. The mandatory minimum that the judge found did not exceed the statutory maximum that would have been found by the jury in any case. And again, it's important to note
that's essentially a Harris argument, basically.
Well, the fact of the matter here, Your Honor, is it was in the PSR that there were 1417 plants. That was not objected to at
sentencing.
But the
PSR was based on the testimony in the trial, which is what he's objecting to.
Exactly, Your Honor. But again, at sentencing, we don't have the hearsay problem, and we don't have the Crawford problem. So at sentencing, the judge is free to consider the testimony of the officers. Not only do we have
the PSR. Not on the basis of hearsay. And accuracy is one of the things he has to worry about.
That's right. He has to worry about reliability. He doesn't have to worry about hearsay at sentencing. The judge.
This is reliable, even though they threw all that information, that background information away? Makes it reliable.
This was completely uncontested evidence. It's important to remember that. There was no evidence presented by the defendant at trial, even though he did mount an aggressive defense.
What is the number of plants which triggers the sentence he got? Number of plants.
The number of plants triggering a mandatory minimum, the judge would have had to find at sentencing that there were more than 1,000 plants to trigger the 10-year mandatory minimum.
Right.
And the testimony, again, comes in from the officers that they counted to 1417. Then it becomes a question under due process of reliability, not a question of Crawford, not a question
of
hearsay.
What's the sentence if less than 1,000?
If the judge finds... The jury's verdict supports anything up to 20 years, but in terms of mandatory minimum, we wouldn't have a mandatory minimum. There is a mandatory minimum 5, I believe, and Mr. Tassif can correct me if I'm wrong, but if the judge finds more than 100 plants.
But here, when we look at the jury verdict, you were saying the jury only needed to find 50. But see, you don't have, it's not like the jury had a multiple choice question. I mean, when they checked the box, they checked 1,000 or more marijuana plants.
They
you
did
know,
have
this,
a
50, this 50 or more, it doesn't say.
That was in the special verdict form that they did. It was a multiple choice, Your Honor, but I guess you could.
Yeah, it was a multiple choice, but I'm just saying they didn't say there were at least 50 and as much as 1,000.
That's right.
They didn't make a specific check on the 50, which you said the 50 is what triggers what? You said
the 50 plants triggers a statutory max of 20 years.
Right, the statutory max, but not the mandatory minimum.
And again,
the guidelines do mandatory minimum. But what I'm saying is the jury verdict in the special interrogatory says 1,000, not 50.
Yeah, and if we take, your point's well taken, Your Honor. And if this, let's assume, for example, that an objection had been lodged at trial to this and the judge had sustained the objection and furthermore said, and without this testimony, there's insufficient evidence for the jury to find over 1,000, so I'm simply not going to submit that question to the jury. We'll ask the jury the other questions, but not that. It's really indisputable on this record that the jury would have found a minimum of 50. So then again, where do we go from there? Then it goes to the judge at sentencing, and it's the judge's duty, it's the judge's responsibility, not the jury's responsibility, to find the triggering number of plants for the mandatory minimum.
So you're saying, like your exhibit that's attached to the appellant's brief, which shows some of the flats. I mean, there are like three flats that are shown there. You're saying the jury would have had to have concluded there were at least 50 in those flats.
And the judge so found in ruling on the motion for new trial, the judge specifically found that there it was obvious that there were hundreds of plants here. The judge said, now, I don't know that from the exhibit itself, the way the marijuana was presented at trial after it had been tested and preserved, or the pictures themselves, that we could get to over 1,000, but clearly there are hundreds of plants here, and that was the finding by the judge in the motion for new trial. Again, that's going to trigger the statutory max. The judge made the appropriate finding at sentencing as to the mandatory minimum. So we end with, again, saying no harm, no foul, and we ask this court to affirm the district court. Thank you.
One thing is you're disappearing. Would you tell them to quit using that concerned citizen stuff, too? I mean, just...
Your Honor, that's also been addressed, as I understand, from the assistant who handled the Franks hearing. I asked him that exact question the other day. Thank you.
Mr. Tassif, if you'd like 1 minute, we will give you that.
Because I feel so strongly about this issue, for Mr. Taylor's sake, please, on page 17 through 19 and 42 through 45 of our primary brief, therein is a summary of the two officers' testimony concerning the methodology. It lays it all out. I don't believe anybody disputes what they actually testified to and how they conducted the count, and what evidence was kept and what evidence was not. Secondly, to say that there's no objection to the number of plants for the base offense level, I urge the court to look in paragraphs 10 and 15 of the PSR. That is part of the record under seal in this case, wherein the probation officer notes that I object to the number of plants based upon the grounds raised in the motion for new trial.
Okay.
It's there. It's right there in the record.
Well, I never questioned that you didn't raise it on the motion for new trial. Otherwise, we wouldn't have it.
Okay. And finally, with respect to that issue, in my reply brief and or my primary brief, this number was summarized in a government report that I got through discovery that merely gave that gross total number and no discussion in the discovery with respect to the methodology. Thus, I had to extract it out of those officers like pulling teeth by a dentist. And that's how this issue came up, and I later discovered it on the motion for new trial.
All right. Thank you very much. Thank you to both counsel. We'll take the case under advisement.